Joshua Crea's poems have an uneasy and riddling relationship with context. Often the context seems sloughed off entirely, like an old skin, leaving us with only a restless, contemplating mind. A mind contemplating, for example, its body's fevers or mysterious wounds, and we are left to infer a dramatic context. Elsewhere, the mind in contemplation is the context, say, when it considers a dead bird, living and dying, its own consciousness, and the mind constantly qualifies, modifies, parenthesizes. Occasionally, the context seems biblical, mostly New Testament, with quotes from Mark, John, Paul to Timothy, and references to Judas, but also Old Testament, though no mention of Joshua, I might add, and hymns to a Lord and Creator. Finally, and I think ultimately, the context is language itself, with a masterful use of image and verb and vowel. As Cole Swinson says of Josh's book, like prayer that needs nothing to pray to. Josh's book, Glean, was the 2005 winner of the Nightboat Poetry Prize and just appeared this year from Nightboat Books. His poems have appeared in Denver Quarterly, Field, the Iowa Review, Pleiades, and Verse. Josh, I guess as everybody here knows, is a native St. Louisan. Prodigal son returned to us briefly after heading for the Iowa workshops and then the PhD program from University of Nevada, Las Vegas, where he was a Schaefer Fellow in poetry. He currently lives in Las Vegas with his wife and is the proud father of a baby girl who we might hear tonight and probably have already, and maybe I'm hearing now. Please welcome back to St. Louis, and especially here to Duff's, where he started as a busboy at age 15, Joshua Crea.
Thank you. Actually, it was O'Connell's where I started as a busboy at 15. I worked here at Duff's for about 6 years, Karen. It was a long time, in and out. So it's really, really wonderful to be here. I usually used to work the bar when they had these readings at River Styx, and I'd sit over there and drink and mutter to myself how I was so much better than those poets up here. So now you can do that yourself when I read. I want to thank Richard especially. Richard and I met many years ago. We used to both work at the downtown St. Louis Public Library. I was a clerk, a lonely little clerk, and Richard worked at the periodicals, I believe. So that was a long, long time ago. I also want to thank Karen especially, Karen Duffy, for having us here at her wonderful place. Let's give her a round of applause. I believe she told me tonight, 35 years, is that right, Karen? Yeah, 35 years for Duff's. So it is incredible. Older than me. And I also need to thank, of course, my wife. My wife, Amber Withycombe, is in the back there. My wife. I couldn't have done this book without Amber, of course. She designed the book, the insides, the outsides. She was proofing and designing when she was 9 months pregnant, really large, at the keyboard before she gave birth. Once our daughter came, she was still designing it and doing work. She even wrote a few of the poems in here as well. So Amber, I couldn't have done this at all without her. So I couldn't do anything without her. So, and of course, my lovely family and friends who I haven't seen for a long time. I haven't been back to St. Louis for about 3 years now. So it's really, really great to be back and to see everybody. So I'm very happy. I do want to dedicate this reading to someone who couldn't be here, however, an old mentor and friend of mine, Don Finkel, who I've been thinking about a lot. And I wanted to read one of his poems, a poem that I just always think about and read to myself. And I want to start off with this poem. It's called Hunting Song by Don Finkel. The fox came lolloping, lolloping, lolloping. His tongue hung out and his ears were high. He was like death at the end of a string when he came to the hollow log. Ran in one side and out of the other. Oh, he was sly. The hounds came tumbling, tumbling, tumbling. Their heads were low and their eyes were red. The sound of their breath was louder than death when they came to the hollow log. They held at one end, but a bitch found the scent. Oh, they were mad. The hunter came galloping, galloping, galloping. All damp was his mare, from her hooves to her mane. His coat and his mouth were redder than death when he came to the hollow log. He took in the rain, and over he went. Oh, he was fine. The log, he just lay there, alone in the clearing. No fox, nor hound, nor mounted man saw his black round eyes in their perfect disguise as the ends of a hollow log. He watched death go through him, around him, and over him. Oh, he was wise. Just a few poems from the book called Glean. These poems start off as sort of a meditation or an address to sort of the obligatory beloved, my own sort of artificial Beatrice. Oh, thou art lovely. Oh, I would like to sleep with you. Those sorts of things. But increasingly, as I began to look further into it and assemble it as a manuscript, it began to be an address to something quite different, another sort of beloved, a different idea of a sort of Beatrice. They became actually about faith, something to do with ideas of faith and belief, and as Richard pointed out, certainly having to do with sort of the Old and New Testament within the Christian tradition. It's sort of a grappling with faith, an attempt of a return to faith. Lots of questions, lots of doubt. I still don't know what a lot of these mean. But that's sort of the premise. The poems are addressed to a you who is not necessarily one of you, but something else out there or up there or around somewhere else. The first poem is entitled Called Back, Called Back. And I'll start with that. Called Back, Called Back. Acquit me. Make me purblind, unbloomed, a thing that, when roused, remains dormant, unused, none among many, as the bulb that persists within its sullen, despondent mood, alive, but no more, no better, than some kind of senseless meat. I turn away, but wherever I turn, I encounter the same soft refrain. I did not call you, lie back down. I did not call, lie back, lie down. There is death, and then there is sleep. Oh, I no longer know who's calling, or what I've heard, or what I'll say. As, when roused once more by your voice light, its endless drag and weight, I move as a tuber on the verge of swelling, the called forth, fruited body, caught between monad and mini, between almost and already. The next one is entitled My Easter. And somebody has hiccups back there. I can hear her. My Easter. Breath bloom, the resurrection lily spent on its stem, the pale throat thrown back announcing what? Behold, all at once, the flesh-like knot undone, each petal released, their beauty unmistakable and already gone. I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. How then explain the resilience of any sacrifice when your body becomes a willed disclosure of flight, a transience arrayed briefly to make plain what will soon be lost? How await the expectant? Render such an arrival when the flower comes apart with an ease and abandon hands cannot stop or don't want to. The lamb that taketh away. But what has been taken, your body broken now over and over, has been taken without enmity, without struggle even. Only that grief, this elegy, is remarkable for its insistence. Appearing to withdraw without yet leaving, you remain, incur trespass, until such a breach leaves you, errant, wandering in this garden, among your relics, your ruin. I followed, wearing nothing but a linen cloth. They caught hold of me, but I left the linen and ran off naked. Give me this, one more day, that I might have it, your just once embrace. This is a short series, about five poems, and it's entitled, How Will You Render It? How Will You Hold It? How Will You Bury or Carry It Away? And each poem has a sort of subtitle, so I'll read those first and then into the poem. This first one is entitled Errant. In the empty, rehearsed space, this chapel, our hands, folded like so little else, but us, oh us, praying, and more, gathered to press a name to, the specter, halo of moisture, the one ghost, surely the only ghost, to have graced this town with its wet signature. Today, the assembled, left to right, the assembled huddled close and shivering. If ever there was mention of before now comes this, in so familiar a way, we went further and further, coming out, the assembled, the applause, the other side. Two, straight, not straight, and broken lines. This would follow after, but no one told me, move slowly when moving at all. The road a chalk line, night a faded blue. Reach around and touch me, while everything else goes by, because everything you've said I've already forgotten. Say something else, then repeat, come close, come closer. The distance between us now shut in both directions, now only a finger pointing away. Before this, my entire life, a stick leaning against a house. Three, Chapel of the Corpus Azul. Threadbare, the lamp-black body drawn with carbon, the soul made of horsehair, this pilgrimage leads to a single shade of absence, atonement piebald, penance ash-faced and leaden. And on the mountain, the air is continually bruised by prayer, the words themselves beating. Four, Errant. Comes a crow on the back of a horse, gleaning such hunger from the landscape makes an image itself hungry, meaning this crow as none other than myself, trying to get to you before nightfall, before remembering, my lord, how contingent upon my wandering, your voice vanishes, ascends, descends, vanishes again. No rigging beyond its partition, this journey, always so sudden, exits. And five, Green Hymn. To eulogize elegy, to mean erudition continuing throughout everything it touches until necessarily reaching it. Stubborn perch, the crow recedes upon air, draft, the slow alluvial churn of wings. In tandem, hands fold into one another, each other caught unaware, in prayer, homage, holding fast, though unfinished, perhaps it can be read as it is. This is another short sequence. It's entitled To Gather the Grapes or the Dry Sticks. One, ruminate, remember. To become acquainted with what is or what is not, or what could be or could not be the matter. Enjoined, the two of us coupled as both reminder, remembrancer. Your body now bright white, visaged, and all the more stranger. Your name scavenged among us, now repeatedly talked about, sought after. Two, what I call you, comforter, consoler, dove that alights upon that which cannot shake it loose, the adored giving itself unabashedly over to the adorer. what I have only just begun to gather up in my arms. The stone rolled back, your body no longer. 3. All morning, this truancy, and all along the way, the tenantless road, offering its promise of departure and return. But what of arrival, its fortune, and those who said their prayers to be counted among the missing? I am here, and still no one has left. 4. What came before you but the desire to reach some terminus, the post or stone set by which we recognize an end? Now your hand is raised as in parting or welcome. Either way, it resembles from here a bride's half-turned face, which is turned as it must to resemble, as it does, my own. This next one, actually, I lifted a title from a Denise Levertov poem, actually. She found this phrase, I think, in a subway somewhere on a flyer or a poster for some sort of Baptist church, I believe. And the title is, O Taste and See. And I took that from her wonderful poem, and I hope I do her justice. O Taste and See, the wound inflicted, the rapture, pursued, pursued, like a dog continually returning to the prey from which it has been driven. Not deterred, nor disheartened even, the animal impulse still worries the human surface, or is, unbeknownst, already obeyed. So when the spear entered your side, I waited. What kind of withness is this? When living in the body, being body, I take up your dark and twin redness, endure in its always torn and fed upon shape, thou dismembered dismemberer. Necessary, or else said to be so, the damage made all the more real by my thirst for it. Mouthful after mouthful, the speechless act, but let you taste and see. And just a few more here. This one is entitled Usury, the Heart, Its Gift and Acquisition. I was reading Pound at the time. Love, interrupting solitude, grants forgiveness, where before the body sought to conceal whatever wound lay despondent and inside. A flower, perhaps, of another sort, though its bloom through the bandage resembles, almost immediately, that of the rose on its stem. It is this we speak of, the rose, more often than others, and have come to understand long before the interruption of love. The salient color now conjured up in the mind working it into a further brilliance, the likeness it holds. How it comes to bear it, the wound, without effort, every time. How it becomes inevitably an image for the mind to use when in the absence of love. Or, closer still, within its confines, the wish to wear our blood like the red roses do. This next poem is entitled Newman, and it does have something in relation to the cover of this book. We luckily had an affiliation with a German artist whose specialty was actually taking older paintings, sort of well-known paintings by Vermeer or Caravaggio, etc., and sort of reworking these paintings, sort of painting over them. And we actually commissioned her to take this painting by Caravaggio. It's a painting of the Doubting Thomas, who is sort of touching Christ as he comes to visit him in the jail cell. And she sort of reworked it. And she did this based on this poem that I gave her as something to sort of work with, give her an impression of my work. And the poem was Newman, which does discuss or sort of alludes to the idea of Doubting Thomas. So here it is, Newman. Provocation, voicelet, what moves in me awaits credulity, a torn sheet in which to wrap its weight. Solicitous attendant, O pilgrim, from the charnel house you must transpire, a shudder, a complaint. What stirs is not ancestry, nor the inception of any one blood. but the insistence to wake, to bear witness, comes as a stranger, from no one's mouth, no other arrangement. Your tongue, speech-pocked, unnerved, a whip circling overhead, my body forced to it, listening and listening, the imagined crack, its hiss, or what it might have said. Let those believe who may. A summon, let those believe, that gathers to itself a certainty. Let those believe who may, the more it leaves one behind. And belief now an unrest, growing singly in search of a pair, the absence of some other, your voice calling out to me, skeptic, refuser, Thomas's head as it continues to shake. Know this, I would not be here without you. And finally, this last poem is entitled Come Hither, and it's a flood poem. There is really no direct reference to any floods that have occurred recently, in particular the one in New Orleans. Some people have sort of suggested that that might be the case. It certainly can lead people there, but it was something that I wrote actually prior to what happened with Hurricane Katrina. But it has a flood in it, so it's called Come Hither, and this will be the last one. Without regret, leave, or wait for water to collect and overwhelm any evidence of your ever having been here. There is no other way. We lift ourselves beyond the casualties of what came before, the flood, the swollen river, its overrunning, and kneel enclosed in a departure of sorts, now that each body has been placed into its ark and sped away. I hear you still, so close the silence full of water, what rocks beneath us, what is shared between, heavy breaths that pull at the air as against ropes, each cinch tightened and relaxed, tightened and. The weather vane courses on through the sludge, its wings flapping with the current. What man couldn't fix, you, Lord, had, and now the sediment, loosed as carelessly as a sack of seeds split, spilled. There is no recovery from such loss. Dark fumed, the water now receding, now pulling us back. Visit or visitation, whatever was meant to warn through drowning. We expect honeycomb and locusts, sign and wonder, but this corruptible mold house, this flesh rot, worm whirl, the finger of you, Lord, beckons, draws forward, lays upon the body its burden, makes it heavy with water. Baptism never seems so deep, the head pushed still further under, each embrace substantiating faith or surrender, the senseless body floating among the waves' incantation. Who will draw you out now that you've given yourself over? Who dissolve your body like a host on their tongue? What stopping place will be provided? What rest? Where am I in this emergence? Who comes? Thank you.